This is special coverage on the Park Fire from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. It's been 6 days since the Park Fire started in Upper Bidwell Park. It continues to prompt evacuations across 4 counties in the North State and is now more than 380,000 acres in size. While many evacuations have been downgraded over the past day in Butte County, evacuations continue in Tehama, Shasta, and Plumas counties, where the fire remains most active at this point. Officials say 192 structures have been destroyed. Many were homes. Yesterday afternoon, the man suspected of starting the park fire was charged with arson. Ronnie Dean Stout, the second, allegedly pushed a flaming car into a dry gully last Wednesday. That's thought to have sparked the fire. Reporter Catherine Monahan from our California newsroom partner KQED spoke with NSPR's Adia White about what happened in the courtroom yesterday.
The defendant waived the reading of the charges, so we did not hear those in the court. There were a lot of reporters there. There were some supporters of Ronnie Dean Stout II, the defendant. In the courtroom, it wasn't clear whether those were family or friends. He was there. He was chained around the waist and the wrists. He looked quite subdued. He looked like he definitely took the charges seriously, took the matter seriously. And the judge determined today that only that he will be kept in custody and that he will not be permitted bail.
And what else do we know about Ronnie Stout?
He's 42 years old. He's from Chico, California. This is according to the district attorney. Two of the most serious cases against him are felony convictions. One's from 2001 in Butte County. That's for lewd and lascivious acts with a child under 14. One is from 2002 in Kern County. That's for robbery with great bodily injury. And for that one, he was sentenced to 20 years. He was released in 2018. And when Stout was arrested last week, he was actually on probation for driving under the influence.
And you were able to speak with District Attorney Mike Ramsey. What did he have to say?
He said that the defendant is charged with willful and malicious arson and also with reckless arson, and that these are felonies that could cause Ronnie Dean Stout II to serve 25 years to life under three strikes. He gave a lot of detail about what witnesses said about the event. Witnesses said that Ronnie Dean Stout II appeared highly intoxicated on the scene. He was seen kind of upstream from the alligator hole where he ended up allegedly pushing the vehicle into the gully. He was seen upstream from that at the bear hole, another swimming hole upstream, by people who said that he seemed very drunk. And then he was also seen driving his car in an erratic manner, speeding. And other witnesses reported that his car, right before it ignited, right before it caught on fire, that they heard noises of metal on rock. And so the DA is assuming at this stage that the car caught on fire accidentally, that Stout maybe got it stuck and was revving the engine, that caused a spark. That's kind of the theory that they're going with at this time. However, that at that point, Stout's response was to push the car down a 60-foot embankment, and we know the rest. It ignited the incredibly dry brush down there and turned into the blaze that is now the park fire.
Right. And what happens next?
There is another arraignment set for Thursday. At that time, Stout will have another opportunity to enter a plea. The DA is expecting that he may not enter a plea at that time, that he and his court-appointed public defender may choose to take some more time to deliberate and think about what plea they do or don't want to enter, or what plea they want to enter. And that's all we got for right now. The DA said beyond Thursday, the timeline is uncertain.
And have you heard anything from Stout or his public defender?
No.
That was Catherine Monahan with our California newsroom partner KQED speaking with NSPR's Adia White. Staying in Butte County, Supervisor Doug Teeter, whose district includes communities like Cohasset and Forest Ranch, says the county is working to support residents. Teeter is a survivor of the 2018 campfire. Today, he talked with NSPR's Ava Norgrove about a resource center officials are trying to put together for park fire evacuees. He says it would have similar resources that were available during the campfire.
You could go there and they'd have all kinds of agencies ready to help the citizens, things such as get a new driver's license, get a birth certificate, a marriage certificate, and have the FEMA assistance folks, and also a small business administration, as well as other entities that were providing direct assistance, like gift cards were being handed out. So that's kind of the purpose of the resource center. The one difference is this fire may not rise to the FEMA funding limit, which I believe is around like $71 million. And so it might be just funded by Cal OES at the state.
And you said a potential kind of opening for it next week?
I believe so. Yeah, they're pushing hard. So I do want to implore people that this information is pretty early, but I just wanted to let you know what we're working on.
And kind of how, along with the Resource Center, how is Butte County kind of planning on responding to the Park Fire?
Those efforts are underway, and it's not just Butte County, but, you know, like Cal Fire is sending out teams that are analyzing, like, each home site. And so that work, I believe, is in process. I already know PG&E has been working on fixing the issues in Forest Ranch. As you know, a lot of the evacuation orders were reduced to a warning so people could go back home. So getting those lines re-energized or fixed is a priority. And then in the Cohasset area, I'm aware that PG&E is in planning stages for some type of possibly a microgrid that would power a small portion. I think they use the word most.
Do you have kind of any messages to Butte County and other residents or any advice kind of for those who were affected by the Park Fire?
It's hard to give advice because everyone's affected differently. But, you know, if I could pass along my experience with the campfire, it's, you know, to be patient. And, you know, I lost my home. So it wasn't like I had this strong urge to get back home to clean out my fridge or you know, make sure my pets are still there. So I get the difference. And I just want to implore that please be patient. We, the county, needs to ensure that the environment is safe for your return. And my sincere, heartfelt appreciation to the struggles of both those that lost their homes and those that have surviving homes. I'm there for you.
Yeah, I definitely understand as someone who also went through the campfire.
You know, just to go further on next steps, clearly I've had communications with residents in Cohasset. They had a meeting. So, you know, getting communication to everyone, especially people that might not be on Facebook or have cell phones, is paramount. So I would like to share a message I've been sending, is that, you know, don't just think of, you know, continuing a Facebook conversation by sharing or forwarding a text to, you know, someone that you know that texts. Think of your neighbor that may not be computer literate or smartphone literate. And please reach out to them if you hear something, such as North Valley Catholic Social Services is handing out a $250 gift card. That would be probably making their day. And otherwise, if it wasn't for you doing it, they might not get that message.
What has been your experience kind of talking to people from Cohasset in that community?
I really appreciated how, I guess, understanding they were with the sheriff, Corey Honey, and I, and some of his deputies met with, it was quite a good turnout. And they were obviously affected by the fire, but they weren't, you know, disrespectful or seemed to appreciate that not all answers could be a yes. And so I really appreciated that demeanor from people, their presence, demeanor, their comforting to their fellow community members was pretty awesome. I was super impressed.
It's awesome to hear that the community is kind of coming together.
Yeah, I think they've always been a tight knit. As you may know, it's a new community to my district. had to expand a lot with the loss of population from the campfire. So both Forest Ranch and Cohasset are new. And, you know, I was just in the stages of forming relationships for folks. And so I guess that's maybe a silver lining, is this disaster will really allow me to learn who these people are and how the county can help them succeed, whether it's, you know, getting back to their homes or continuing on with their lives after the loss of their home.
Yeah, that's a hard transition to make.
For sure. And, you know, the campfire was, you know, 5.5 years ago. And, you know, I believe like Paradise is somewhere between 30% and 40% rebuild. And, you know, some of us, such as myself, we're still rebuilding. And, you know, it's probably going to be at the 6-year mark when that effort. So I just want to say that this could be a fast process or it could be a long process, depending on the situation. You know, for a lot of us with the campfire, COVID hit, and high prices, inflation, and some of that's come back, but it's still going to be a challenge. And I just want to implore that it could take a while to get back home.
That was Butte County Supervisor Doug Teeter speaking with NSPR's Ava Norgrove. And the county did confirm this afternoon that it will be opening the local assistance center. It will be located on Pillsbury Road in Chico and will open on Monday, August 5th. You're listening to North State Public Radio. When we return, we'll hear about how animals are being rescued in the fire. Stay tuned. This is special coverage on the Park Fire from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. During a wildfire, it's not just people who can need to evacuate, but also animals. For those who need help, the North Valley Animal Disaster Group has volunteers who go into evacuation zones to save animals and to help shelter them. NSPR's Ken Duvall today spoke with Norm Rosine, who works with the group. He said today was the first day people had started picking up their animals from the park fire. The group had about 69 large animals, horses, donkeys, pigs, and some goats at their shelter, and about 100 small animals at the height of the fire.
So the North Valley Animal Disaster Group kind of has two missions. One is to evacuate animals, and the other is to shelter animals. So our evacuation teams are trained to be able to go behind the fire lines. They wear yellow Nomex, just like Cal Fire. We have the same Bendix King radios as Cal Fire. We're on the same frequencies. And the idea is that we're able to work with other agencies and within the incident command structure so that we don't get in the way. But we're providing a service by getting those animals out of harm's way. And we have great evacuation teams with both good animal handling skills and also the ability to, you know, take care of themselves in a fire area and stay out of trouble. We have a hotline that's 24/7. So people can call the hotline and report either if they've seen an animal or their animals need to be removed. And then a lot of times while we're traveling through the burn zone, we will see animals that have gotten loose or aren't, you know, they don't know what to do. So they're out there and we'll pick those up. And then a lot of times the search and rescue teams or Cal Fire or the utility crews will find an animal and we will come up and retrieve that from them so that they can continue their work. That's, I think, where we're really helpful is by taking that burden away from, like, Cal Fire when they find something and they, you know, they now want to take care of it. But if we can take it from them, then they can continue to fight the fire, which is really helpful.
You're able to evacuate animals of all sizes, I suppose. Maybe not an elephant, but you have horse trailers and the kind of equipment you need to.
Yeah, we haven't done an elephant yet, but yeah, we have experienced horse people with horse trailers and stock trailers. So we do evacuate a lot of horses and other livestock, and we've pretty much seen the gamut of animals as far as whatever people have in rural areas. I think the most unique rescue I remember is taking a couple large emus out of a fire area. And emus are much bigger in person than they look like when you see them on TV, and staring face-to-face with an emu that looked like he wanted to take your nose off was quite a unique experience.
I imagine it's they may be somewhat resistant to strangers coming up and trying to grab them.
Yeah. They really weren't aggressive, and they had two. This was a family of two adults and two chicks. And so what we found was if we moved the chicks into a barn or a stall, then the adults followed. And so that's what we did. We used the chicks kind of as our way to have the adults move. And that way we didn't have to wrangle the adults. We just kind of wrangled the smaller chicks.
Oh, interesting. Clearly, you're set up primarily for evacuations and sheltering in crises. Do you do other work during the year, for example? It sounds like with some advanced training in rescue that you might be called on by local agencies to help.
Yes, primarily whenever we go out, we need to be activated by the county. We never go out on our own. And that's primarily for disasters. We have the ability to do horse rescue with a helicopter. So we're very fortunate in that the sheriff has allowed that if there's an emergency situation with a horse and we need to lift it out of a canyon because it's injured, we can do that. And 2 years ago, there was a horse that stumbled and fell and was injured. And we took the helicopter down there and we lifted the horse out of its predicament. So we do single incident type rescues. It's much more rare than the fires we do, but it does occur.
You know, at the end of an incident, do you ever find yourself with remainder animals that aren't claimed? And if so, how do you handle that?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked. We do. It's not as common as people think. Occasionally, there will be an orphaned animal that the owner doesn't pick it up, and the animal just kind of gets left. And those go to our local animal shelters and then are adoptable at that time. But there's a kind of a legal process for the ownership of an animal and when it is adoptable. And none of these animals are going to end up being euthanized. They're all going to end up in a shelter, and it's always going to have a chance at getting adopted.
That was Norm Rosine with the North Valley Animal Disaster Group speaking with NSPR's Ken Duvall. And lastly, if you've been listening to this station since the first days of the fire, then you were probably aware that our KCHO transmitter was in danger of burning last week. If that happened, we would have been off the air during a critical time, as evacuations were being issued nonstop and our team was working around the clock to get that information out. Thursday night, the entire news team and our operations technicians here and in Sacramento watched a live camera that sits atop the transmitter as flames approached it. Here are some of them the next morning telling the story of our transmitter making it through the fire.
I'm Sarah Downs. I'm in operations in Chico.
My name's David Bourne. I am the director of broadcast infrastructure out of the Sacramento office.
I actually heard about it here at work. I heard everyone's phone go off, and I look down at my phone and see the notification of the fire, and I thought, oh, it's in Upper Park. Like, that's not good. Upper Bidwell Park.
Sarah's the one that kind of alerted it to me and how close and how fast it was growing. The KCHO transmitter is the big heartbeat of Chico NSPR broadcast. We went up there earlier this year, and as we drove up that canyon, I remember thinking, like, there's a lot of underbrush here that hasn't been cleared out in a long time. It just felt like this, you know, tinderbox that could go at any moment.
The transmitter, it was located in one of the evacuation zones. And I knew, like, that's not good at all, because that means no one can get up there to do anything to protect it. And we were just kind of having to sit and wait and see what happened. And then we received an email from someone that shares the tower with us. And he said, hey, it looks like the fire might be about 2 miles away. And so, you know, all the alarm bells were going off.
I got the same email, and he had sent us a link to this webcam, and I had not seen it before. And you could definitely see the fire, and it was a few miles away. And that's when we really started to think in our heads, like, okay, what are the worst case scenarios of what are we going to do if this happens or that happens? And you try to plan all these scenarios in your head.
it was slow motion at first, and then it was just all of a sudden it was there. It was right there on the tree line, and you could see it just inching closer and closer. It was actually kind of terrifying and really hard to watch at times.
So we stayed in communication, I think, until it was past 10 o'clock last night, and we were all just kind of watching. The entire tech team was just watching along, and it eventually got to the point to where we realized we weren't going to be of any use the next day at work if we didn't try to get some rest.
I slept really hard, and when I woke up this morning, I thought, oh, you know, go to work, and it's just going to be dead air, you know, what are we going to do? And I turned on the radio, and there we were. It was cool and exciting, and it gave me a little bit of a morale boost.
I woke up this morning at about 5, and I checked my email, and the engineer had told us that the fire had passed through, and he told us the current status and that we were still on the air. And I literally had to read it like 4 times because I did not believe that the transmission line coming from our building up to the tower is going to survive this. But here we are. We're still on the air. It's wonderful.
I mean, looking at the webcam this morning and even now, you can see more trees. You can see it kind of, the smoke kind of clearing out, and seeing our little tower standing there makes me a little proud, you know.
That was Sarah Downs, our operations technician at NSPR, and David Bourne, director of broadcast infrastructure at our partner station, CAP Radio, talking about watching the park fire as it threatened to burn down the NSPR transmission tower last Thursday night. And I'll close out with what I was listening to while watching the transmitter that night, jazz with David Bassi on NSPR. It was a really close call. Thank you to everyone who helped keep us on the air. More special coverage is coming up at 5:30. Stay tuned. Adia White, Ava Norgrove, and Ken Duvall helped produce this special coverage. A special thanks to CAP Radio. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. I'm Sarah Bohannon. You're listening to North State Public Radio.